Brown. I'm here today again with another A Lens a Day Conversations about Information Architecture. And it is my great pleasure today to talk to Sarah Barrett. Sarah, thank you for joining me.
I'm excited to be here.
You know, I've been usually coming up with a unique adjective to describe each person, sort of like a little personal challenge that I've given to myself. And I just glossed right over the adjective that I picked for you. So I'm going to say it again, because I just feel really like it's an important thing. And I want to acknowledge you and this. So I'm here today with the astute Sarah Barrett. Sarah, thank you for joining me.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
So let's talk process. You've got some big, complex IA problems that you are wrestling with in a very large organization. And I'm intensely curious about how you draw people in to that process. In some ways, I'm actually less interested in the steps and more in the collaboration. What does that look like when you bring people in who are not IAs, who don't think deeply about information architecture, but you rely on their experience or their expertise or their perspective in order to help you and your team do their jobs? What is it that you do to kind of bring people along for the ride?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that I do a lot of treating our IA process like an IA exercise itself. So it's a very meta process for us. So for example, we have a standard IA process that we take people through. I work for Microsoft. We do the information architecture for docs.microsoft.com and a bunch of other things. And so the three information architects on my team, we meet every quarter and decide on what our process is going to be that quarter based on what we've learned previously. We define deliverables, create templates, do all of that, communicate that out to people along with like a change log about what's different from the last quarter. And then we have a retrospective at the end of each quarter where everybody gets to provide feedback on how it went. And so we treat the process itself very much like a product and give people that that view into it, that certainty, and that treating it like a separate thing that could be interrogated and challenged that wasn't interrogating or challenging like me and my authority was really important, because I found that people had a very hard time disagreeing with it and they'd kind of just be like, oh, okay. So we present it like a thing that can kind of be torn down each quarter if we need to, try to keep it the same for a quarter so we have a chance to actually like try it out. You get the same thing from each of the three IAs instead of a different process depending on who you get on your feature. We all came from consulting, and so it's very much a like, here is our offering right now kind of perspective, which is kind of foreign to in-house work most of the time. But it works really well for us, and it means that people can kind of ask questions about and interrogate and like figure out their relationship with the process rather than their relationship with like me as a person and whether they feel like saying, I think you're wrong or whatever. So that's what we do. One of the things that we talk about a lot is making sure that people have we're providing people with the tools to disagree with us, because IA can be very esoteric. And unless you really like educate people about what you're talking about and why they might disagree or what the downsides to this approach would be, at least in our practice, they tend to go, all right. And then you never get the good information about why you shouldn't have done that.
That is amazing. You said we meet every quarter and decide what our process is going to be. I got like chills. I was like giddy about that. What has remained, if you could just sort of pull one element out of that process that has remained relatively consistent over the versions, the iterations, what would you say is the one thing that's been fairly stable over time?
We almost always do some version of Sophia Prater's object-oriented UX. We call it content modeling, but that basic like noun foraging, figuring out the relationships between content objects kind of process. It's an example of the kind of change that we made. We originally followed a process that was much closer to kind of what I might do with a client, where you really like get them involved in the process and you start with the noun foraging, where you're like, what kinds of things do we have in this experience, and get people to like brainstorm nouns and figure out whether they're the same thing or not. And the feedback we got from everybody was like, I don't care. I trust you. Will you just tell me what they are? Like, I can't do this. It's hard. I'm tired. Like, can we do something else? So now we still do that same process, but we have a different kind of kickoff meeting. And then the IA goes through and like comes up with a first pass of like a concept model to react against. And everybody really prefers that.
That's awesome. I'm finding I just find that with IA work in general, not to mention design work in general, we know that it's easier for people who don't approach it with the same mindset that we do to see something and react to it rather than sort of plumb the depths of their own knowledge and pull that out. Is that sort of one of the principles of how, I guess, if you've got this process, are there some underlying principles that guide the design of the IA process and the iteration of that IA process?
We have them written down. Let me see if I can find them real quick.
You wrote the principles that guide your IA process design.
Yeah, so we have 7. I can tell you from all of them if you want.
Give me give me your favorite one.
For this kind of work, one of them for me is execution is everything. There is no value in IA that we cannot build and ship. And so we are very practical about everything we do. That doesn't mean just like, can the engineers build it, but also like, is this feasible for the scale of content we have? Can our authors write this stuff? Do users also want to use it? But all of that stuff. So it's a very pragmatic way of handling this stuff, which I think is a little bit different from some of the applications of the kind of more exploratory concept modeling that I've seen, because I see it used for more startup-y work or more like blue sky solutioneering, where it's like, well, how might we, what could we do? Right. Like we had no limits. And I am all about limits. I love limits.
I love limits too. And I do feel like a lot of IA work is sort of operating at a certain level of abstraction and constantly pulling ourselves down to earth to make something, if not implementable, then at least accessible people, so people understand what it is that the implications of the thing that we're designing are. How do you help people understand what those implications are when you're dealing with noun foraging? Like, how do you help people connect the dots between we're looking for a bunch of nouns to this can turn into a feature at the end of the day?
Mm-hmm. And like, to be perfectly honest, I don't think we ever got great at that, which is one of the reasons why people were like, can you please stop making me do this? And I said, yes, you don't have to anymore. They're like, I trust you that it's probably valuable at some point, but I feel bad at it. I don't know why we're doing it. And like, isn't the place where we ended up obvious? And which is one of the big challenges in IA, I think, because like, if you're doing it right, the answer should feel inevitable. Like, you know what I mean? If you design a structure correctly, everybody's like, well, of course, why would we have done it every other way? And then you're there in the corner being like, if I weren't here, you would have found some other way and it would have made no sense. So like bringing that abstraction is really hard. One of the facilitation techniques that we use a lot is teasing out those examples as much as we can and making them as concrete as possible. John Hodgman has a thing that I love where he says specificity is the soul of narrative. And so like, tell people a story, be specific about what exactly is going to mean. And it means that the IAs and my team have to have a really nuanced grasp of the system and the authoring process and all of that, because we have to be able to be there and say like, okay, if we do this, that means that it actually can't be authored in this way. It's going to require a different kind of PR. Are you okay with that? Because nobody else is going to catch up on, is going to realize that. So it's not something you have to have everywhere.
What is your personal most favorite part of the process? Like, what is the part that makes, that always sort of engages you, Sarah, in just how it works and how it's coming together? Is there one particular activity or moment in the process that you feel like, I can't wait for this part to happen?
For me, it's probably the concept modeling. It's also the most tiring in a lot of ways as a facilitator, especially doing it remotely. You know, we do all of these in Mural now. We did even before, because our team is kind of globally distributed before the pandemic. But you have to be really on, and I'm very drained afterward. But teasing out the implications of decisions we're making and the logical, what logically follows from one thing to another, and you know, what we're going to do about that and how this solves our problems and all of that is very satisfying to me.
So is there an IA challenge that you're working on now that you can share with us?
Is there an IA challenge that I'm working on now? Yes. Let's see. I just got back from being on vacation for 2.5 weeks, so I don't even know what I'm doing for work right
today. Maybe that is the IA challenge. What am I working on? Yes.
I did go straight into a meeting when I got back this morning, where we were talking about some navigation decisions that had been made months ago and then get re-questioned, as they always do. And somebody has said, Sarah, what's the difference between an event and a show? And I was like, what's the difference between an event and a show? Like,
yes, that does sound like a question.
That's the difference. You know, like it's like a TV show versus a conference event or something like that. Like, the difference that exists in the real world is the difference for us. And so trying to, like, that's what we're going for. We're trying, I think you have a card in here about like the reflection of reality or something like that. And I really love reflecting reality in our structure as much as possible, especially because we're not inventing new things. So trying to convey that.
You have a good way of capturing those decisions that are made, not necessarily because you're coming back from vacation and you're like, yeah, why did we do it that way? But just because these processes can twist and turn a lot, right? And sort of have us revisit some decisions that we've made, have us re-examine some things. But sometimes we sort of make a decision, we're like, okay, this is it. We can't do this. Mm-hmm. We can't make any changes here. What do you find is a reasonably good way? Because there's no perfect way to kind of socialize those decisions and make sure that you're not sort of keep having to revisit them.
Yeah, so I mean, I think there are two different things there. One is how you actually like document the decisions made. And we try to put stuff in a PowerPoint, and like there's a diagram and then also a summary with diagram of like the decisions that were made and why, which is kind of like, eh. We've toyed around with other ways of doing it. In technical architecture, there's the idea of an architectural decision record, which treats each decision like an object in an information system. And you kind of, the idea is that you're almost like cards, where you note down what decision you made and why, and then when you make a new one, you make a note of like which decision it superseded. So the idea is that multiple technical architects can all work on one huge system and be up to date, even if they haven't worked on it for years. We've never managed that, but we try. We do keep a log on each content type because we have our whole content model documented. Each content type has a log of the major decisions that affected why it's constructed that way. And they're really basic things. So we have a decision like user is the way we represent people on the site. We don't have other kinds of people. And then, you know what? We're going to introduce a new kind of person. So like that decision is mostly gone. So like we're figuring out how that works. But there's a list of those that we keep track of. And those are provided along with the documentation. The other side of that is keeping decisions made, which is much harder. Like you can write things down all you want. People won't like not change their mind. And so, you know, I went on vacation for 2.5 weeks and came back to what I would consider a fairly major strategy change that we're just like going to get rid of part of the site because we don't want it anymore. And I'm like, all right, great. We did all of this work, which is fine. Assuming that was really important. That's not true anymore. So this is the part of the structure that stays the same. And then this is the part that you can change because like development has already started on that. You get to strategize on this part. But keeping decisions made, I feel like, is mostly about understanding and like buy into the process. the strategic changes are different from the like, I just didn't like the decision and now I'm thinking about it again, so I'm going to make a different one. But that's really about understanding and understanding the implications, I think.
I think we also sort of have to accept that no decision is ever going to be firm. And part of that is just the nature of IA work, where I think there are folks who've been doing this for a while who can sort of look at a decision that's made about a navigation category, what have you, understand the implications of it, and do our best to try and communicate those implications, but not have anyone else on the team really internalize those implications until they see it in a mock-up, or you know, see it in a flow, or see it a little further down the road, where the nature of that decision becomes much more clear, right? And so in a sense, I think our processes need to accommodate this flexibility, because decisions that we make earlier in the process certainly affect downstream decisions, but may not be well understood in the moment that they are made.
Yeah, absolutely. I take a lot of my philosophy about this, but I worked in theater for a long time before I did this. I worked in costume design, and the best director I ever had, I remember my boss, who was the official costume designer, I was the assistant, going to her, and I think we were in previews or something already. And he was really just agonizing over the decision about like what exactly his character should be wearing in this case, and like what it was going to do. And she said, well, whatever he's wearing then is what he's going to be wearing when he kisses the heroine for the first time. And he was like, okay, I know what to do. Like, she gave him the context and the implications of that decision, and it made it clear for him. And I was like, this is exactly what you always need to do. Right. Like, as an IA, as a manager, as like a consultant, this is the best thing I can do. It gives somebody the right context to make a good decision with their expertise.
So I think this is as good enough a transition as any to our lens. And when we talk about sort of designing and making decisions in the abstract, or maybe absent a lot of context, I feel like some of the decisions that we make are driven or in the context of the lens that we zeroed in on for you. That was a terrible transition, but I did my best. So can you tell us what lens you picked and what about it resonated with you?
Yeah, we'll fix your transition in post. We'll get it. Don't worry.
I'll just need a better costume and it's good.
Yeah, I picked rules. It says designing a structure means designing a set of rules for how things fit together. And I picked it because I think it is what IA is all about, but is the most invisible part of work in a lot of ways. Saying the most, I think, is hard. But it especially appeals to me because the scale and the seniority that I work at means that I don't design anything anymore. I can't tell you last time I came up with a page layout. I don't choose labels for navigation. I barely design the navigation itself at all. Like I don't design metadata. I've never built a taxonomy. Don't tell anyone. but like, I don't do any of those things. What I do is that role that we were talking about, where I help people figure out how they should do those things and what the rules for other people doing those things should be. For a little bit of context, just in the way we work at Microsoft, I have an IA team, which is extremely lucky, and I'm thrilled for that. But we do docs.microsoft.com and about 8 other websites, which support about 800 products and all the technical documentation for each of those, all of Microsoft training and certification content, a Stack Overflow style Q&A platform, a code sample site, tons of things. And each one of those 800 products has a nav bar that I do not choose what goes in it, because I don't want to. Each one of those 800 products has multiple tables of contents that they organize their documentation into. You know, each module in our training site is tagged in a certain way and is broken down into units that somebody else said. So everybody else is making all of those IA decisions all the time, and I don't do any of it. And so my job is to create good enough rules and give good enough context that everybody is making slightly better IA decisions all the time, rather than designing it once. That's why I chose rules.
What how would you describe this in your own words, in so far as when you say you design rules, what does that mean? Because I suspect 9 designers out of 10 don't do that. So what does it mean when you say you design rules?
I define what kinds of things we are allowed to have on the site and how they interact with each other, and then kind of what we can know about them. And there might also be some other things about that because I'm not coding anything, because I'm not actually designing comps, because I'm not doing any of the things that people think of as work, like I'm really very useless. Because I'm not doing any of that, I have very removed ways of affecting what happens on the site. So my team does things like we put together guidelines for schemas that the dev team implements, and then content has to validate against those schemas. So that's there's a rule for kind of what is acceptable to have on the site or not. We also have a validation service, and we can design rules for that validation service that says kind of what goes up there or not. We can put together automated review tools for pull requests that go up on the site. That's what we do for the navigation, where we have a couple of things where it validates whether the right things are in the right place in the navigation, and then it flags us if it's not. Because we can't look at everything and we're not designing all of it. So when I say we're designing rules, like a lot of times it's very literally what we are doing, because we did all of the stuff that you think of as IA doing. We're like, made a concept map of like all the big main ecosystem map. We have a journeys and our content model and all that stuff. And we're like, okay, that's great. How do we make the site do it? Given that we have 75 million documents and hundreds of authors, and it's nobody's job to realize this except us. And it's nudging it in the right direction over time by setting up rules.
Are these, that was great. Thank you. That was really great. I love this part of the job. I love, I don't get to do it nearly as much as you do, but when I do get to do it, I find it intensely rewarding to acknowledge that this is as much an important design decision as color or typography or any of the other kinds of decisions that the design team or the product team will get to make. Are the rules that you work on, it sounds like they are codified, that is to say, literally rendered in code. So when you design a rule, it's something that you pass off to a developer so they can create some kind of code that will enforce that rule, or at least realize that rule. Do you also design rules that govern people? That is to say, maybe a simple way of the simplest sort of implementation of this is some kind of style guide that says, use this kind of language instead of this kind of language. Do you find your rules kind of bleeding out into the organization in lots of different forms?
Yeah, so I think there's kind of a continuum of how like hard and realized the rules are, where at the one end there's, you know, this is in code somewhere, it's being validated against, it's really real and true. And you have to, you know, you have to have a root admin password or whatever, like get by it. And then there are the things that are kind of in the middle where, for example, we put together a rubric by which every new URL path on the site gets reviewed when it gets published to make sure that it's compliant with standards. So I don't check each of them. There's a publishing administration team that does that, but my team worked with stakeholders to define what the rules there should be. And then somebody else is making them happen. And then when it escalates and somebody gets mad, I get CC'd on it and make a decision. And then I think there are really, really fuzzy rules that are mostly about being memorable and pithy and getting in people's heads about how the site should work. And so a lot of it is just saying things over and over and hoping people remember, and it becomes part of what we do. The most successful one, I think, and I don't know, everybody I work with might be like, we don't say that, but I say over and over, like, one of our main design principles is we don't lie to users, no matter, and that sounds simple, but it's actually very complicated to do, especially because there are good reasons to do it. But like I have so many interactions with content managers. They're like trying to do the exact right thing. And they're like, I think it would really make a lot more sense if I organized my table of contents like this. And we're like, great. Is that how the product works? I said, well, no, but it would make a lot more sense this way. I'm like, great. We don't lie to users. Like, I'm sorry, we have to do it the bad way because that's true. And the desire to kind of like smooth over is very strong. And I get it, but we can't do it.
I love the idea of pithy rules. There's some kind of parallel to parenting there that I'm going to dig into when I have some time to think about it. But in the meantime, one of the things I'm most sort of curious about is how do we help newer designers understand these lenses, but these perspectives, right? This kind of mindset of information architecture that folks like you and your team have cultivated over the years. I worry that a lot of newer entries into the field don't have the opportunity or the coaching to really cultivate this mindset. So if you were to hire a new person onto your team, how would you coach them to understand what this lens is trying to do? How would you try and help them bring this lens to bear on their work?
Yeah, that's actually extremely relevant because like one of the things that I coach everyone to do, but I have it kind of on my like talent development rubric thing is something, especially for more junior designers, is like I think one of the best ways to learn is to be in meetings, in working sessions, whatever, with more senior people and think about the choices they are making and the techniques that they're using as rules. Like think about them as things and evaluate how well they are working. And so when a more junior IA or taxonomist or something comes onto my team, one of the things that I ask them to do is like, okay, when we're in a meeting, especially when we're not just talking to each other, but we're talking to some third person, think about what I'm doing and whether there's a category for it in the ways we do things, in the techniques that I'm using, and did it work? What do you think would have gone better? How would you phrase this thing we are doing right here as a rule? Does it work? So like in the way that you're encouraging people to think about their information architecture, where like for each choice, what's the rule? Would that hold everywhere else? I encourage them to do that with everything we do, because I think that way of thinking about it is one, a great way to learn, and two, it's a muscle you build to be able to see that kind of like meta layer of the world rather than the things, seeing the arrangement of the things. And the more you practice, the better.
That's great, Sarah. Sarah, if I ever decide I need a new job, I hope I get to work on Sarah Barrett's team because I'm just super jazzed about the work that you are doing. So thank you for joining me on this little journey.
Thank you so much. This has been fun.